Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we're going to speak about hotels for Pesach, halacha, hashkafa. Are they good? Are they bad? We're going to have Rabbi Leizer Ginsburg. He's the Rosh Koel of Yeshiva Smir. He's also a Rav in Flatbush of the Aguda. He's going to be speaking about the importance of Pesach at home, the importance of family, how we should be Maisa Nefesh for it, etc. Very interesting interview. We're going to have, we'd like to do point and counterpoint. Rabbi Yitzchak Neger of Sabra Tours in Baltimore, he makes Pesach programs for many years. He's going to be speaking about how people thank him for the inspiration they receive from the tours that otherwise they wouldn't have. He's going to talk about the kashrus safeguards he takes. Then we're going to have Rabbi Steinberg, the rabbinical coordinator of the OU. He's going to mention the 8 questions you should ask the mashgiach before you go to a Pesach program. And if any of them are negative, he says you should be quite concerned. He's also going to mention something remarkable, how the OU, 2 years ago, there were 200 Pesach programs. The OU didn't give a hashgach on any of them because most of them, he said 70% couldn't, or 80% couldn't respond favorably to these 8 questions. And the last 20%, he said, wouldn't pay for the OU because he said their standards are too high. So 200 programs, 0 with an OU hashgacha. We're going to have Rabbi Mordechai Shane. He's going to be speaking about kashrus issues at hotels, both for Pesach and in general, that you should be concerned about. And then we're going to have the hotelier, Rabbi Aryeh Wagner. He's done Ben Toira. He's made many Pesach programs. And he's going to respond to the questions like, what about all the gashmias in hotels? And he has a very interesting, he says, look, I'm not a rabbi, I'm a caterer. And then he's going to talk about how many of these people who make hotel programs, the caterers, he says that's their whole parnassa. He says the yidin, we should let them make parnassa, etc. He'll give the other side of that story. So overall, it's point, counterpoint, fascinating, should be a very interesting program. Rabbeisai, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700, press number 2. That's for what the Bnei HaYeshiva have to say, or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say. If you've been listening for the last year, year and a half, you'll be happy to know that Headlines 3 is coming out, with many of the topics that we discussed, debated, argued about, agreed and disagreed about, with comments from the Rabbanim who took part of it. After every piece, we print the Maror Mekayimus and what the Rabbanim said, their opinions on the topic. I think you'll find it interesting and really usable by the Shabbos table. You know, you want to get everybody into it. You just don't want to talk about Trump anymore. You'll be able to talk Divrei Elokim Chaim with the Maror Mekayimus. You'll agree or disagree. It's coming out Purim time, maybe a week after Purim. We only printed 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 of them. They'll go quickly, so I urge you to go get one. We started Daf Headlines a few weeks ago. It's Baruch Hashem grown very nicely. We have another, basically 2 weeks. Wow. 3 weeks before Pesach. And it's fabulous. It's on the parsha. It's a few minutes. It's on the daf. And some of the topics we're going to talk about. Should you take tzedakah to stay in Kol or go to work? We're going to go through the shitas in the Shulchan Aruch, Rishonim, etc. All from the daf. Okay, the next daf we speak about. If you do a mitzvah b'dieved, can you redo it or not? That's the famous Reb Chaim. We're going to go through the Reb Chaim by Lulav, and we'll ask a fabulous kasha on Reb Chaim. I remember I asked this kasha in Eretz Yisrael. It created a big tumult. The next thing is, somebody lost his taste in Corona. Can he make a bracha al achilas mur? You have to be toyim tamur. Or for that matter, can he make a bar mine b'samim if he can't smell? A lot of people aren't aware of this. A lot of people are going to say bracha levatala this year by mur. I'll give you an 8 of what you should do. What about minyanim during COVID? If you're mekayim a mitzvah b'shasa sakana, the Yeni Yom Tov says you're not mekayim the mitzvah. So we're going to ask that l'chayra, all the people who got married, let's say at the height of the plague, when it really was dangerous, according to the Yeni Yom Tov, that you're not mekayim the mitzvah, all the brachas under the chuppah were bracha levatalis. So the nashim should be asa, kala b'li brachas asur l'bayla kenida. Do they have to do Sheva Brachas again, all these Kalas, according to the Ayin Yamta? We will speak about the Gemara that says you say Halal for every Nes. Should you say Halal on Yom Atzmut? We'll go through the different opinions. So we say something really Yishmak on the Daf Arete, and then we say some Divrei Elokim Chaim of Chizuk that comes from the Parsha or something from the Zman that we're in. It's really something fabulous. I hope you'll enjoy it. You can sign up. You go to dafheadlines.com and you can get it either by signing up to the WhatsApp page. You go down to the bottom is WhatsApp. You put your number in, or you can get it by text or by email or by phone. A lot of ways. Here is somebody who's enjoyed. I got this voicemail.
I just wanted to tell you, I'm here in San Jose, California with my daughter who's pursuing therapy here now. And so I have a little bit of time on my hands. So I went on All the Daf, which I go to from time to time just to see if there's anything more interesting. And I saw the Daf headlines. And I got to tell you, I listened to one right before I went to sleep last night. And I'm so hooked. I listened to every one that you started from beginning of Pesachim until where we are in today's Daf. The information, it's gewaltig. It's insightful. And your perspective is refreshing. Halavai, we should have other perspectives equally refreshing, and it is relevant, and I think authentic Yiddishkeit. I think it's authentic Yiddishkeit. So keep up the great work. I just had to share it with you because I'm having such nachas and pleasure from it. I can't wait to hear the next one. Zeige bench, zeige sind. Well, best wishes. Thank you.
Before we go to our program, I'd like to say Avart. I'd like to give a disclaimer to my holy audience, that I'm going to say Torah and the Paraduma that I am not holding by, and I don't know that I would ever be able to accomplish what I suggest, but I do believe that it's Divrei Elokim Chaim, and at least it's worth hearing. I've spoken about this in the past. This week is Parashas Parah. It's one of the two Daraisis, according to many Rishonim, this and Achiyas Amalek, and it says Zois Chukas HaTorah. And then it says Parshas Parah. Now, the word chukah in the Torah appears many times, but this is Zois Chukas HaTorah. This sort of represents the biggest of all the chukim in the Torah. Why is that? It's true we don't know the reason for Parah Aduma, but there are many mitzvahs. We don't understand the mitzvah. We don't understand the time of the mitzvah. And let me suggest an idea to you. There are two ways that we can be mechanech, a child, or ourselves. And one of them, or we can create something. We can create something through miksha. The menorah is made by miksha. You take a piece of metal, you bang it out, and you create a menorah. And what does that mean? When we, let's say with a child, or with ourselves, we have a certain midah. We bang, and a rose pops out. It's all positive. All the banging, all the formation, is we take all the powers of the thing, make sure it's made out of one piece of metal, and we form it, we shape it, we create it. That's one way. But another way is chakika. You take a block of marble, and you take some type of shaving material. It's like a machine that goes zzz, and we take off pieces, we create psilus, and we create something that way. What's the difference? The difference is miksha, we take nothing off. We save every part of the person, etc. By chakika, there's a lot of psilus. Psalacha shnei luchay savanim. It's a much more painful process. It requires a lot of destruction. Now, what's the Parah Aduma? The Parah Aduma is a one-time creation. There were only 7 Parah Adumas brought in history. And what is it? It's a young calf. In the olden days, the bull, the great bull by Merrill Lynch, a bull represented power. It was a source of food, sustenance. It pulled the plow. So it represented, power, it was horsepower. And a young calf represented the future of a farmer who had one. He had something valuable. But the red one represents the one that is full of life. It's spectacular. It's going to be that raging bull that Merrill Lynch has by Wall Street. Something really spectacular. What happens? It gets destroyed. And what does this represent? The destruction of aspirations, the destruction of dreams. It's that person who we loved who died. It could be that great business deal that got away. Maybe that shtela, that chavrusa, that shidduch. Something really beautiful that was destroyed. And we don't understand why. So there are many times chukah in the Torah. Something gets destroyed, it's calm. Some we understand. But this is really the ultimate, like tzaddik v'ralei. Why did this happen to me? Or why did this happen? Period. And there are two ways to look at this. One way is to cry, which we probably do anyway. Grieving is important. But the other way is to understand. Miksha is we use everything. It's understandable. Chakika is very painful. But at the end of the day, chakika, if we carve and we carve and we create that hole to the other side of the wall, suddenly we could see things we never saw before. It says, Psalacha by the Luchais, the Mem and the Samach b'nes ha'yuaymdim, but we looked through it, we saw the other side. So Chakika, much more painful, but ultimately it transcends Miksha. What does that mean in our lives? We could look at a tragedy and just curl up, but there are people who can turn that tragedy into pure electricity, into nuclear, and which is what happens by the Paraduma, those ashes, the greatest tumah is Tumas Meis. Tumah represents loss. All Tumah is loss. The Tumah of Shiva Zera Lavatala is the child who could have been born. Same thing with Tumas Nida. It's the blood that lines the uterus. It could have been another child. All Tumah represents loss. The greatest loss, Aviyah Vais, is when somebody passes away. And there's only one way to be Matayer, the Ava Tumah. What is that? That's through the ashes of the Paraduma, somehow converting that into electricity. And let me share with you a few stories. Everybody heard of Rav Gustman. He was the great Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael of Netzach Yisrael. He was 20 years old. He was in the Bezdin of Reb Chaim Isa. Well, there was a Nobel laureate, Robert Oman, who lived in Yerushalayim. He got his Nobel Prize for mathematical game theory. He had his oldest son, his oldest child, he was extremely close to him, fought in the war in Lebanon, and he was killed. And Robert Oman was devastated. They say he cried. People came to Menachem Avil. Nobody could be Menachem him. So he told Rav Gustman, and Rav Gustman went to be Menachem Avil him. And he sat, and the guy was crying, and he said, listen for a moment. And he looked up. He says, you lost a son. He says, I too lost a son. In the beginning of World War II, the Nazis captured me. They took the son out of my wife's arms. They threw him up in the air, and they caught him on a bayonet. He was a child. He said, he was my only son. I never had another son. Nobody to say Kaddish. He said, you have other children. He said, my son was not Zeicher to Kfuras Yisrael. I don't know if he was ever buried. I don't know what happened to him. We were dragged away. He said, your son was Zeicher to Kfuras Yisrael. He said, I can never be Mekayim. V'higadata Labincha. It was my only son. I can never be Mekayim. V'shinantam Levanecha. So he said, I understand your pain. Rav Gustman then leaned in. He looked at Robert Oman and he said, I never sat Shiva for my son. Let's sit together and sit Shiva for our sons. And they sat together and they wept. When he left, Rabbi Oman said, nobody was able to be Menachemi except for him. In a much smaller way, in my life, I remember when I was in yeshiva, I was dating, and there was one girl I dated 6 times, which was then a lot of times, and I fell like hook, line, and sinker. Wow, this is the one. And then I got at the end of the 6th date, I sort of started inferring, I'm looking forward to the next date, like I was really head over heels. And she says, listen, you're a very nice boy, but I want somebody who has more hislahavas, is frummer, whatever the case was, so you're not for me. And I remember being devastated, like I couldn't learn for a month. And I tried again, I had the Shatkin call back, and just it wasn't to be. And at the time, it seemed like a really, you know, horrible thing that happened. But now it's just a memory. But I'll tell you when it comes back, when a boy comes to me saying he's heartbroken, and I can say, you know, let's sit together. I've been there. I've struggled with it. I can empathize with you. Cry on my shoulder a little. But you know what? You can find somebody else, and I promise you, this will just be a memory one day. Or somebody comes in, they're struggling in business, and they say, you know, I have a bankruptcy or a foreclosure and there's bizyonis and I'm embarrassed. And I say, you know, I had one deal that blew up spectacularly. And I was in the front page of the Wall Street Journal 3 or 4 times. And none of them were singing, you know what I mean? None of them were talking about my lawyer's guyness or genius. It was quite embarrassing. And you know what? So you weren't on the journal cover, right? So it wasn't so embarrassing. Let's together, let's discuss it and let's discuss about how we can turn these ashes into energy. And I'm sure all of you, everybody has some story that they've gone through that was quite devastating, and they can use that story to be Matayer somebody else. So Rav Gustman turned his tragedy into energy. We had on our program, we had the honor of having Rabbi Eckstein, and he's conveyed really a amazing story. He said, we got married, me and my wife, and we had a son. At 10 months, he started acting strangely. We took him to the doctor. The doctor looked at him. He got very pale. He ran out. He called an associate. They sat us down. They said, your child has Tay-Sachs. Tay-Sachs, as you know, is an incurable disease. The children usually died. They slept till like 4 or 5. And he sent me to the only hospital in Brooklyn that had a large Tay-Sachs ward. This is what they did. And we were lucky. We got our son in, he said, because people checked in, but they never checked out of the Tay-Sachs ward. And they used to stay there till they died. He says, a year later, we were mechazik ourselves, and we had another child. At a year, that child started acting strangely. We took that child to the doctor, and it was deja vu. He said, your child has Tay-Sachs. That child died. He says, a year later, we had a third child. And that child, too, at a year, he died, too. Three children. He said, I lay in bed. I couldn't move. Imagine this. And then he says, one day I got up and I said, I'm going to stop this. And he founded Dur Yesharim. And he said on our program, he said, I was there last year when they padlocked the hospital that you couldn't get into because it was too busy. They padlocked it shut. The Tay-Sachs ward, he says, because there were no more children, no more Jewish children with Tay-Sachs because of Dur Yesharim. Only somebody who went through this could accomplish something like that because it burdened him. It burned a hole in his heart. He turned the ashes into Mayim Chaim El Kelly. So Zois Chukas HaTaira, this is the greatest chukah. This is the one where something happens. It's unimaginably bad. And this is the story of the Parah Adumah. This is the story of Robert Alman and Rav Gustman. This is the story of Rabbi Eckstein. And what does the Torah suggest? Turn deepest hurt into energy. If we can do that, we ourselves are going to be Zaycha to Tahara. This is the story of the Parah Adumah in 2021. There is no Beis HaMikdash, but the message of the Parah Adumah lives on. And now for the riddle of the week. This is a great riddle because you could use it all the time. All your Shabbos tables, you could ask the Bachrim. Ach es Shabbosai tishmeiru, ki oishu beinu beinechem. Shabbos is an ois. And the Gemara says, Menachas, Lamed Vav, and the Shulchan Aruch, and Lamed Aleph, and Re'er Chaim, Lamed Aleph Aleph, that we don't put on Shabbos, tefillin on Shabbos in Yom Tif, because it says, by tefillin, V'hoya l'ois al yadcha. The Gemara says, Misha tzrichen ois. You put the tefillin on because you need an ois. Yatsu Shabbos ois, V'yem toivim, Shein gufan ois. Shabbos in Yom Tif is an ois, like we just said. Achas Shabbos ois tishmeru, ki ois hu beini ubeinechem. So Shabbos is an ois, so you don't need another ois. Question is, why don't you say the same thing on Mila b'Shabbos? Mila should not be Deicha Shabbos, because what does it say by Mila? Also, it's an ice. So if Shabbos is an ice and Mila is an ice, why don't you say it's a zilzal in the ice of Shabbos to have the Mila, because already Shabbos is an ice too? Why do you need the bris ice kodesh, ice bris kodesh of Mila, if Shabbos is already an ice? That is our riddle of the week. As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700, and for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online where readers or listeners can access them unless you request otherwise. Let's go to our guests.
The great honor of having joining us Harav Leizer Ginsberg. He's the Rosh Kollel of Yeshiva Smir. He's also the Rav of Agudas Yisrael Zichron Shmuel. Welcome, Rabbi Ginsberg.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share some thoughts the way I understand about hotels for Pesach. Am I correct?
Yeah, so that's what I ask you. Somebody wants to go to a hotel for Pesach, and what's the Rav's opinion of this?
So could you give me 3 minutes to talk? Okay?
Adarabba, to hear 3 minutes from the Rosh Kollel of Mir, was can sein besser.
Okay. So let me begin with someone today happened to tell me over a story, personal story, so I won't be mentioning a name. He was looking for a shidduch for his daughter, and someone mentioned about a boy with his name. So his question was, then maybe he should not consider it because it's the same name. being that it was very close to Rav Tam, he asked Rav Tam, should he consider the Shidduch or not? This was the last year of Rav Tam's life, and Rav Tam thought for a minute. And then Rav Tam said, in today's time, this should not be a consideration for not looking into the boy. And the person took the opportunity to ask Rav Tam, what does the Rosh Hashiva mean that in this time of age, this should not be a reason not to consider the boy? And Rav Tam first did not want to answer, but then as he was pushed, he answered. He said that in our days today, to find a bochur suitable to have a successful marriage, having those qualities that is needed for a successful marriage, is not so easy. And therefore, we have to overlook the same name. As long as you see the boy is somewhat fit for your daughter and to have the successful marriage, this is the boy that you should consider. Now let me try to explain. What does Rav Tam mean that now in our times it's much harder to find this boy, this chosin, which will be suitable to fit a perfect marriage, a happy marriage, a successful marriage? And I think the reason is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a tremendous ability to strengthen our family life. What is the ingredients to strengthening a family's life? The connection between father and son, father and daughter, mother and son, mother and daughter, siblings, is the Yontif Pesach. The Yontif Pesach happens to be the first Yontif of the Gimel Golem. And this Yontif Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, as it should be, the way and the means and the ingredients in building a strong family ties.
And the Raya, Rashiva, and the Raya, I want to just say, the Yikhu Lachem ish selabesav, a selabayas, the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael.
Exactly. Beautiful, Reb David. Exactly. Selabayas, and they gave the mitzvah of Igarat Obincha. A mitzvah of Igarat Obincha. Let me just insert another story before I go on. This story was told to me also by an individual that he had the opportunity to go to Eretz Yisrael. This was right after the Chasana. He was planning to go with his Kala to Eretz Yisrael. And the question was, should he leave before Pesach or should he leave after Pesach? And the reason why to leave before Pesach was because where he was going to go was very suitable for the answer of Pesach the way he understood it. He asked for Moshe Feinstein, and Moshe Feinstein answered him, where do you usually prophet Pesach till now? He said, of course, by my father. He says, in other words, to be Mekayim the mitzvah Igarat Obincha. By you leaving Eretz Yisrael before Pesach, you're going to be missing out, you and your father, on the mitzvah Igarat Obincha. So therefore, leave after Pesach and not before Pesach. In other words, even after the Chasana, he was already married. And still no, Rav Moshe felt the importance of this mitzvah, which the Yontif Pesach was built, like as mentioned, Selaveis Ovei Selabois is really the ingredients of strengthening the home, strengthening the connection between parents, children, siblings. That's the Yontif Pesach. And it's not only the Seder night, which is the mitzvah of Igarat Obincha, but throughout Yontif Pesach, the getting together with all the Sudois, this has a special zgua. Being that the Torah set it out with such clarity, Selaveis Ovei Selabois. So why is the zgua of this Yontif to strengthen the home, strengthen the connection, strengthen the ties, strengthen the ava, strengthen the love that children should have for their parents, and which parents have for their children. So therefore, the best place of this strengthening, this connection, is of course at home. When you head off to the hotel, even if you have private quarters, even if you have private rooms, but it happens to be it's Rosh Hashanah hotel. Hotel is Rosh Hashanah. The children could be have what to do. There's plenty what to do in a hotel, and there's plenty of places to see and to be. And what's most important, being together with the parents, and being together in a scene where it's only the family together, this is missing in a hotel. And that is why I feel very strongly that Pesach should not be a Yom Tov to go to.
Rav Leza, let me just be moisis some things, if I can, but Rishus Harav to what you're saying.
Pleasure.
You know, we see that by Sukkis, he says, Kol Yisrael Ruyaleisha V'Sukkah Echas. So it's a time to get together all of Klal Yisrael, but by Pesach, it's Nechel Rak L'Menuyav.
Right.
Pesach is a very private affair, and Sukkah is a very adarabah. And you know where else you see it? You see that the concept of tzli. The Maral says, why is it not tzli? No, like Sukkah no muvushal. So the Maral says, he says, how does bishul, when you put a chicken into a soup, how does it give the flavor? The water sort of, it penetrates the chicken, it starts fraying and falling apart, and that gives a tam to the whole soup. He says, tzli, the more you roast it, fakert, the tougher it gets, the more it becomes nischaba, and it expels everything foreign. So since Pesach is the time of Selah Bayis, Rak L'Menuyav, that's why it has to be tzli. Can't be. So, yeah. But let me ask the Rav something. So people say two responses. One is, they say, look, you know, the olden days, the women didn't work. They weren't outside the house. So they help make Pesach, etc. Today, most Kohel wives work very, very hard. Most everybody, most families are two-wage earners. Like the Rambam writes, the Isha shouldn't leave her house more than once or twice a month. The world has changed, and, you know, the women are exhausted. It's like one woman said to me, she said, women haven't left Mitzrayim yet. They work the whole year, they come home, they have to take care of the kids, do the laundry. Pesach, they have to start cleaning, kratzing. And so they said, the times have changed a little. That's one taina. What would the Rav say to that?
That I would say is like this. The Eivish descent on this world, the coronavirus. The coronavirus, the Bari Oyum had many, many, many chesbonis why he sent the coronavirus. Millions upon millions of reasons why he sent the coronavirus. And I believe, seriously, that one of the reasons that the Eibishter took into Cheshbon to send the coronavirus is to show Klal Yisrael that you can make Pesach without a hotel. Last year, we were forced, all hotels had to close down, and we were forced to have Pesach at home. This was a Cheshbon of the Bari Yisbarach Shemoi, because since that argument that the women have seemed so strong, so the only way to reason with it wouldn't be enough to say, talk. The way was only to show it actual, factual. We saw it last year clearly that if we have to, Klal Yisrael and our women have tremendous kliyos. We should know some tzidkonis nigalum.
But Rashid, I want to say that.
To do it, it was done.
We
had a beautiful Pesach at home, locked in our house, not going to our hotels, and this was that tzocha of our Pesach last year.
But on the other hand, the women didn't work out of the house last year. Corona closed all the offices. Adarava, since they were home, they were able to do it. I'm asking, in a year where the women go to work and they work very hard, and they just don't have the kayach to make Pesach. That's what do you?
So on that. First of all, the corona broke out between Purim and Pesach. Till everything closed down was very near Pesach. Oh, but I'm not going to go with that argument. My argument is like this. My mother, Zechorna Lavrocha, a great, great lady, a daughter of Reb Chatzko Levenstein, a wife of Agoyin, the Rosh Hashiva, Reb Ephraim Mokri Ginsburg, had not an easy life, to say the least. First of all, when she was, her father in those days had to travel in order to make parnasa. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Ponovich, and then he was a Mashgiach in Kletsk and in the Mir. And she was distanced from her mother and her from her father. And then when they got together in the Mir and she got married, her father left Eretz Yisrael. And then they had to go to Shanghai and came Gerim to America. And then, not long after my father, 12 years was in America, he left this world and left my mother with $8 in the bank and one child married, five children that weren't married. And she told me, had she do it all, we never felt we were missing, because Baruch Goizer Makayim, the same Baruch Oyum that's Goizer, she says, gives the Koiches to Makayim. If you want to do what the Eibishter wants you to do, then the Eibishter promises you, I'm going to give you the Koiches, I'm give you the ability to do what has to be done. Just listen and want to be mekayim what the Eibishter wants. And I feel very strongly that the Eibishter wants us at home for Pesach. And this that the women claim we don't have the koiches, if they would say to Rebbein Shem, please, I want to be home because I want to listen. And I want to do what you really want me to do. Give me the koiches. The Boreim would give them all that koiches that's needed, and they'll be relaxed and so happy and so lovely looking at the beautiful Seder at home with all the children and the son-in-laws and everyone sitting around that Seder and praving. Selah boys, as your David said so beautifully.
So here's another, and I'm just kekayf b'fnei adam. I'm only saying over l'asma megabetan. Some people say that, you know, when I'm home, we can't sit by the Seder. We're running to get this, we're running to get that. It's mamish constantly malayf the megate the makum by the Seder. There's waiters over here, and they take care of everything. Adarabba, the best sederim we had is in a hotel because people took care of us. What do you say to that, Taina?
My answer to that is that shows that we're lacking in chinuch. What do I mean? In the chinuch in my home was mechonech that the daughters were up and helping. They didn't come to the house and say, Mom, we're guests, you take care of us. They were up and helping. And when they brought to the table, it's an ander geschmack than if a waiter brings to the table. When a child is being mekayim kibud of the aim, and he brings the mekayim the mitzvah of taking care, whether it's his father, whether it's his husband, her husband, whoever it might be, but being mekayim this mitzvah, that every preparation that's done Pesach that you prepare is kule mitzvah, kule mitzvah. Everything that you do from shloshim yom on, whatever you have done for Pesach, you are being mekayim a mitzvah. When you come to the Seder night and the children understand that this is what has to be done, and they're being mekayim a mitzvah. Every little bit, and I'll tell you again a story. I'm sorry I'm telling you so many stories. Rav Shach was sitting by the Briskerov, and the younger daughter of the Briskerov had two daughters that made it out of war-torn Europe, and the younger daughter brought over to the Briskerov a glass of tea, and the Briskerov asked for sugar, and she brought over the sugar, and the Briskerov did not take the spoon, take the sugar, put it in. The daughter took the sugar with the spoon and knew exactly how much her father wants and put it in and mixed it. And then she took away the sugar. Rav Shach looked at the Briskerov and asked the Briskerov, Milamdeinu Rabbeinu, teach me, why did you have to have that your daughter should mix the sugar, should put in the sugar? Isn't it enough that she brought the sugar to the table? This is what Rav Shach asked the Briskerov. And the Briskerov answered, I didn't want her to be my neyaha from the mitzvah of kibbut av. Every little bit that she did, even though I could have done it on my own, but she mixing the sugar, no hashtiko kibbut av, no hashtiko kibbut av. How important in our chinuch to our children is that they should understand the importance of chinuch, of taking care of parents, of being mekayim the mitzvah kibbut av. And when you're home and you're helping out and you're bringing to the table, it's kulei mitzvah, kulei mitzvah. Besides, let me just insert, I was never in a hotel, but I can imagine, I can imagine you have to wait. Waiter, I'm up to moitzi matzah. Another 15 minutes. We know the waiters aren't there on the second when you're up to moitzi matzah to bring you what's needed. Let's not fool us, but that's a side thing. Even given that you have a private room with a private waiter that is there standing on your side, but the vaiva, the mitzvah of kibbut av v'eim, help bring to the table every shtickle is cool, mitzvah, mitzvah, mitzvah. How could we let it go by? How could we put ourselves in a position that we can't do all these mitzvahs that are available? My wonderful listeners, I'm speaking from my heart. Please, please, listen to me. Stay home. Stay home. Have a Pesach together with the family. Enjoy family life. Enjoy the chinuch. Enjoy being together. And one more story. I'm walking down the street on Avenue R towards the Miri Yeshiva. As you all know, the houses on Avenue R have big gardens. And there is a gardener who happens to, I have befriended it. And I'm walking down the street. And he stops me and says, Rabbi, I envy you. I ask him, why? He says, because you get together every Saturday. Every Saturday you get together, family, sit down together, and you enjoy Oh, yeah, when is it Thanksgiving? Another day. We don't have this family life getting together, eating around the table together. I envy you. This is a guy talking. He envies what we take for granted. He envies us. And here we take what we have, and we want to put it aside. That's my fear. And please, Rabbi, listen to me. I'm telling you, Var Hashem, I'm no suffix. This is what the Eibishter wants. Please listen to me. Yes,
We're just doing another question yet. There are people who maybe they're almonis. They have, you know, difficult situations at home. Maybe somebody who's a chayla. There are people who live, you know, v'yishmu rechaykim v'yavayu. There are people who live in Yene Ekvel that on a yomtiv they don't hear a Dvar Hashem. And these people, they come to a hotel. They hear Rabbonim, they hear... Do you think that a hotel is for nobody, or that there are people who taka for them it is a...
Again. The Torah Deutsche said, someone that's in a position that is an onus. When is Achman a patri?
Well, but Derech Rechaika.
Derech Rechaika. The Torah gave to Turin 100% if there is a good reason. But even those people that have these good reasons, they should discuss it with a Torah authority, with their Rav, with their Rosh Hashiva. Let's discuss it with them, and then once they tell you, yes, this is the right thing to do, then you're going with Das Torah, you're going with Tzeiak Nishmaya. Because the Torah gives an alternative when you're not honest. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those people that could make it at home. And for luxury, for other purposes, as mentioned, this is what I'm pleading. Those are what I'm asking. Let from this discussion come out of Te'elis that I should be able to hear, that people should call me up and say, Reb Lazer, we heard you, together with Harav Reb David Lichtenstein, we heard you, and we're listening to you, and we're going to follow what you have told us. This will be the biggest nachas for me, and the biggest hatzlocha for Reb David on all his undertakings. Thank you so much, and have a beautiful Yom Tov.
Kol Tov. Bye-bye. Joining us from Baltimore is Rabbi Yitzchak Neger, Talmud of Ner Yisrael, who runs Sabra Tours for over 25 years. He's been doing Pesach programs for the same time frame. Welcome, Rabbi Yitzchak.
Thank you. I'm glad to be joining you.
So tell us, when you have a Pesach program, talk to us about some of the kashrus challenges to get things right. You know, there are caterers who are more careful, who are less careful. What are some of the, challenges, you know, obstacles, etc., when it comes to kashering a hotel for Pesach?
Well, that particular responsibility, Baruch Hashem, I give over to the Rav Amatzer. For many years, we have been using top kashrus organizations, Rabbanim, who bring in a team of not less than 6 or 7 people. We have a mashgiach in the kitchen the entire time when it's open. And about a week before Pesach, we actually go and kosher the entire kitchen with a team of 4 or 5 mashgichim and maybe 10 goyim, and go through the whole process, which is a difficult process. Obviously, we're going into a kitchen that's totally chametz, and probably treif as well. So it's a little difficult thing. There are a lot of things that cannot be koshered, so we own our own equipment for Pesach that we use on our own, and we bring that in for Pesach. And the food products all are GLAT, all of Yisrael, non-gebrocht programs that I run. So all that food is checked by the Rabbanim. We have one or two mashgichim that check out the vegetables that need to be checked. We try to buy as much as we can that are already pre-checked, because it's a very delicate operation that we need to do to check the bugs, obviously. But we do need that, because you can't really get as much as we need to from products that are out on the market.
So Rabbi Yitzchak, do all programs take the same care as you do?
I would say there are programs that are a little bit more makel in areas like Chol Yisrael and GLAT and checking of the items. And not everybody uses hand shmura matzahs, which we use exclusively. Some of them use machine matzahs. I'm not going to get into the caches of all that, but there are lower and the higher standards that people are looking for, and we try to do the highest standards that we possibly can.
And do they all take the same care with kashering kitchens, using their own equipment, etc.?
I would say, from what I've heard, there are mechilim in what you can kosher and what you can't kosher. Not everybody has the same madrega in kashers that we have. We try to do the highest trimmers that possibly we could. Some programs take shortcuts and they make one what they're using, what they're not using, what they're kashering, what they're not kashering. So I would say we try to reach the highest standard that we can. I don't think there's a program that's higher than we are. There are obviously programs that match us, but there's nobody that's any higher than we are.
So somebody told me he was in a Pesach program in Mexico. The Rav Amachshir actually told me this. And he came into the kitchen one day, and all the waiters were sitting there eating Danishes. And he started screaming at them, where did you get it? That's not from here, Rabbi. We bought it. We brought it in our own Danishes. It's not, you don't have nothing to worry about. I mean, how do you prevent things like this?
Well, we actually have an agreement with the hotel that no staff member can bring any outside food. They all must go and wherever they're going to eat, in a restaurant or outside the building. As far as the waiters and our staff are concerned, we feed our waiters all the meals, breakfast, lunch, and supper, and no one is allowed to bring any food from outside. Everybody's told that. It's repeated every single day, including drinks and any other candies or whatever else they're buying. So we are very strong in that area. And from all the years that I've been in, I don't remember any incident of anybody bringing any food in the building, whether it's our waiters or whether it's the hotel staff. We're pretty lucky with that situation because it does slip through when you have 1,000 people at a program.
Well, let me ask you another question. So what happens, I imagine, by your programs, do you have any Litvaks too, or is it all Hasidic backgrounds? I'm curious.
No, mostly Yeshiva and Litvaks. Hasidim do not go away for Pesach. I think there's only one hotel in the United States where it has really large Hasidic island. We do have a few Shramot, maybe 15, 20. But,
okay, so let me ask you a question, man. So you have somebody in your crowd, and they brok. It's very nice that Yananga broks, they brok, and they have soup, and they break the matzah into the soup, and they eat it. These kalim then go back to the kitchen. Do you... Like, how do you control kalim that have broks that don't have good broks? Like, what do you do about it?
Well, we have special Pesach plastic bowls for people that want a brok. We do announce it first night by Mincha, by Marv, whoever the guy who makes the announcement, and the waiters know that these are available, and we give out plastic spoons, and obviously we try our best to keep it under control. I'm not going to tell you it's 100% perfect.
So what happens if somebody puts your broks into kalim, do you put the kalim aside? Do you until next Pesach? What are the programs?
If we catch it and we know about it, we'll take the table off the table. We'll take the plates off the table.
I understand. And what do you do with the plates afterwards?
We put them aside and you can use it, you know, later on. It's not trite.
I don't say so. The blias of, let's say, of gebrucht, the gebrucht itself you wouldn't serve or anything. But if this gebrucht was used in the plate would be reused again subsequently.
Yes.
That pays
off. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Talk to me about like the shiurim that you have, etc.
Well, every year we have different speakers. They're all B'nai Torah, obviously, Chashuv Rabbanim. We had Moshe Meir Weiss, Rabbi Daniel Neistat from Lakewood. This year we have Rabbi Apter from who's a rabbi in the Lakewood area. We have Rabbi Friend, who has joined us many times. Numerous Rabbanim of that caliber that speak throughout Yom Tov, different times, and we have speakers for ladies speakers, can come to the men's speeches as well, but we do have specific speakers for ladies, and then we have chavrusas and learning with the teenagers, so we have a teenager program. So some of these rabbanim will come and say a shiur and whatever on Pesach or Chumash or Masechtas Pesach, and it's a really Ruach Nizdika and Gashmi Nizdika Pesach that people spend.
So there are people who, and I'm just repeating back questions that are asked to me, there are people who talk about a lot of these Pesachs that they say the quantity of food that's served is together gzoilo v'saive. A lot of people put on 5 pounds or 10 pounds over Yom Tov. Do you think that the gashmias has gone too much overboard?
I have been not on Pesach at the programs where I don't think any human being can consume the amount of food that's served. On Pesach, I haven't been in any other program. I'm assuming those programs do the same thing. And yes, it's overdone. Our program is not the lowest and not the highest. It's middle of the range. Number one, we can drop our pricing because of that. And number two, there's not a lot of waste, not a lot of food that's thrown away. There is a significant amount, but we don't overindulge in food area. We do nice tea rooms and nice Mava Malkas and things like that. But we don't overdo it compared to a lot of the other programs out there.
Okay. Do you have anything else? Do you have like a favorite story you want to share with us?
I would like to touch this year on the COVID issue.
Oh, Adaraba. Yeah, let's go for it.
Cause I think
so are you guys open this year?
Well, we have a hotel up in Tarrytown, New York. It's about a half hour from Muncie.
Right.
It's called the Tarrytown House Resort and Estate. It's a magnificent property with 23 acres. So people don't have to be stuck inside, you know, in this COVID situation. There's a lot of grounds, a lot of things to see around the Hudson River. And we're making a large attempt. We're going to have instant COVID testing every single day available in case somebody doesn't feel good and they want to do the test. We're going to have, we got permission from Westchester to have 150 people in a dining room. We have numerous dining rooms and numerous meeting rooms. So we're going to run a program, you know, based on protecting everybody. We do have quite a bit of people that are already reserved. I think a lot of people are still waiting after Purim and see what the sense of the vaccinations are, how many people get vaccinated. So we hope to run the program. And a lot of programs closed.
Interesting. Well, Rabbi Yitzchak, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate being on the program and continue to have luck and success in all your endeavors.
Amen. Thank you so much, Kolta. Bye-bye. Joining us is Rabbi Lenny Steinberg. He's rabbinic coordinator for the OU in the Kashrus department. He's a Talmud of the Mir in New York, Mir Yerushalayim, Lakewood, the West Side Kail, a genuine Talmud Chacham. Welcome, Rabbi Steinberg.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Steinberg, is there anything that you want to share with us that you think a good story, a high point, a low point, like that you think our Olam would want to hear?
Well, I don't know about stories. I mean, I can just tell you that as a tip for people who are shopping for Pesach programs. OU has not really run Pesach in a while. We require that the entire hotel be Pesach. We don't want to run into problems where a waiter will run in, you know, to the wrong dining room with a tray full of bread or something like that. So, you know, Pesach is a time that we want to make sure that we're, you know, we're 100% safe.
Well, but so, most, Rabbi Steinberg, most Pesachica hotels take the entire hotel, right? So why won't OU? Why isn't OU giving Hechsherim?
No, that's not true. Not all hotels take the hotel. Not all,
okay,
all
so
programs take the entire hotel.
Why isn't the OU giving Hechsherim on people who do give the entire hotel?
We do. We would if they apply to us. You know, so we require a decent amount of mashkichim to be able to cover everything. Sometimes people feel that that's excessive.
So
we'll go to a different matcha.
The OU, like last year, were they on any hotels?
Nope.
So you're saying last year there must have been...
Last year there weren't any hotels open.
Okay, so this year, how many hotels?
Two years ago.
Did they do?
No, we haven't done so.
So can I say, two years ago, there must have been 100, 200 hotel Pesach programs. How come nobody came to the OU and asked them to do it?
I can tell you, all the applications come through me. I had very few.
Why is the OU, the most used Hechsher program in the world, not get any requests for a Pesach program hotel, to be Masher a Pesach program?
Well, the first month that I told you that we required the entire hotel, and I probably, maybe 7 out of 10 do not take the whole hotel.
70% don't take the entire. And what
don't take the entire hotel.
What Michel could come out of it?
Out of not taking the entire hotel.
Yeah.
Waiter can grab the wrong dish, bring it into the dining room. Comes from the wrong kitchen to the wrong dining room.
Oh my goodness!
There could be chefs that are very comfortable in the hotel. Will go and grab, they like their own knife. They'll sneak into the kitchen and take it.
Wow, I didn't realize that. So then the 30%, which still, if there were 200 hotels 2 years ago in the United States, there's still 60 hotels. Why did none of them come? Why is the OU so unpopular?
It's not that we're so unpopular. We have a high standard, and not everybody is up to keeping it.
So not a single one of the 200 hotels in the United States did you give a hechsher on because your standards are too high?
Right.
Besides taking the whole hotel, how else, in what other ways are your standards too high?
Well, we require, we dictate how many mashgichim we need. And that becomes a point of contention a lot of times with operators and programs. They don't like to take married mashgichim, not more than one. They understand that Rav Masher, would have to come with his family, but they don't want to pay for any other families to come. They want to handle about how many mashgichim we need. We don't. We call the shots on how many mashgichim are required.
So why don't you just take mashgichim who are bachrim? Why do you need married mashgichim?
Well, sometimes we just can't find bachrim who are qualified.
Define qualified.
Qualified means somebody who is a responsible person who we know will show up on time. You know what it's like to wake up after a seder when you have 14% alcohol in your system, four cups, and you have to get up the next morning at 6 o'clock to be in the kitchen. So we want to know that we have people who know how to kasher, because we need all hands on deck kashering. We want to know that there are people who are responsible and we'll be alert.
That's a frightening thing that nobody, the OU standards are too high for all of the 200 hotels in the United States. That's really a scary statistic. I want to tell you, by the way, you talk about standards. We went away a number of years for Pesach. It's been quite a while. And the last year we went away, which I don't know how many years ago it was quite a number of years ago, I saw there was rice in the salt shaker.
Oh, really?
So I called over the mashgiach, and I said, why is the rice in the salt shaker? So he looked at it, he said, oh, they must have mixed up the trefa salt shakers and the our salt shakers. And after that, I said, we're never going away again.
Okay. I mean, I would venture to say that wouldn't happen in OU hotel, because we would lock up all the trefa kalim.
So you're saying they don't want to pay for married mashgichim. They don't want to have the number of mashgichim. Like, how many mashgichim do you require?
Well, it depends on the kitchen.
Okay.
If you have two kitchens, you're going to need more. If you have one kitchen that can be covered by you have your field of vision, you can see everything that's going on. I would venture to say 4 plus a Rav Masher.
5. And if you have two kitchens?
If you have two kitchens, double it.
10 people. You're saying it gets expensive. And what percentage of kitchens, what percentage of hotels have one kitchen, and what percentage have two kitchens?
I can't say. I don't know. I mean, big programs generally have more than one kitchen.
So you're saying putting up 10 people become very expensive.
Right.
Anything else I should ask you, Rabbi Steinberg?
Well, I guess you want to know when you're looking at a program what you should ask, because the mashgiach, he told me he worked in a Catskill hotel, and he was giving the daf yomi. So when people were packing up to go home, they used to say, oh, you're the mashgiach, now I know a kosher. So he told them, by my seder, first we ask for tzir kosher, so after that we have shulchan aruch. So if you want to go to a program, you want to know if you can rely on it, you should call up the Rav Masher and you should ask some pointed questions. You want to know, you can ask him whose shkita they use. You want to know if he's on top of things. So you ask him questions just to see if he knows what he's dealing with. You want to know if they have two dishwashers. The milk is in place, you're not going to cash it in between. You want to know if they're
when you say
the dining room.
When you say two dishwashers, you're saying that every time they run meat, they kasher it before the next time they run pleshik?
Before the next time they run milchik.
I'm saying with the milchik and pleshik, they use the same dishwasher back and forth.
The same dishwasher back and forth. Many programs do that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What else? Give me the 5 or 10 questions we should ask if somebody's going to a program.
Okay. You want to know how many mashgichim they're going to have?
And what would be what would be unacceptable answer?
You tell if they have too much mashgichim, I think that would be unacceptable.
Three mashgichim.
I don't think you could do a program with 3 mashgichim either.
4 mashgichim.
4 mashgichim possible.
Okay, depending how many kitchens they have.
Right. Right, but you can ask that also. How many kitchens do you have, and how many mashgichim do you have?
You really need like almost four per kitchen, you're saying.
Right.
Okay. What else? Give us your next questions.
You want to know if they're taking the whole hotel, or it's if there's going to be chametz, how far away is it going to be from the Pesach program?
How would they even know that? You know, are they taking the whole hotel? Give us another question.
The Rav Matra should know that if you go to take a hotel.
But that's already a warning sign if they're not taking the whole hotel. Give me another question.
You want to know what their standards are for Hachana? Hachana is a very big issue on
Shabbos. You mean?
Like this, we have Shabbos going into the first Seder, and then the first day going into the second Seder.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily so, it's going to affect you personally. I mean, they do hachana, so you can wait a little bit. But, I mean, it's something that gives you a standard of what kind of hashgacha that you're coming to.
So give me an example. What would you ask? What would you consider a good answer, and what would you consider a bad answer?
Well, they tell you that, you know, we're going to have the rabbi stall the people, you know, give a long speech. And we don't let the waiters start setting up until it's done. That would be a good answer. But they say, no, you know, it's a game, so we don't worry about it. That's not a good answer.
Okay, good. What else? Give me your next question.
There are a few other questions that should be asked. If you're going to a program and you want to know that the program will be halakhically acceptable to you, number one is... you want to know if the rooms have electronic keys. Many programs will take a hotel that has electronic keys, and they'll make an arrangement where you bring your key to somebody who's on the floor, a security guy on the floor, and he'll open the door for you. We would not do that. The key we would consider mukta, and having a guy open the door for you is amira lenachri, which is not permitted. The other thing is, you want to know if you're an elderly person or you're on a high floor in the hotel, you want to know if there's a Shabbos elevator. Many programs will just have somebody in the elevator, and you tell them which floor you want to go to, which is, again, Amir al-Nakhri, which is not allowed. The preferred method would be to have a Shabbos elevator that would stop automatically at every floor. Now, hotels today are very high-tech, and they have sensors in the room so that when you walk into the room, the air conditioning goes on, you walk out, the air conditioning goes off. The lights many times are automatic. The toilets in the lobby have automatic flushes, and sometimes in the room. And these things, you want to make sure that these things are taken care of and addressed so that the sensors are disabled for the duration of the program, or at least during Yom Tov, Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though they may be on during Chol HaMoed. So these are definitely things that you should ask the Rav Machshir to be able to know what caliber of program you'll be going to.
Rabbi Steinberg, Chakashiv is Sameach, thank you very much for your time.
Kolta,
thank you. Kolta, bye-bye. Joining us from New York is Rabbi Mordechai Shane. He learns in the Miri Yeshiva. He's also been a mashkiach for over 20 years. He's done many Pesach programs. Welcome, Rabbi Shane.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
So, Rabbi Shane, can you tell us about some of the challenges of being a mashkiach on Pesach?
Basically, it's the same challenges as during the year on regular Shabbos.
but just more intense because it's much bigger. You have many more workers, many more, especially goyim, and you need more maskichim. And the sages that could come up are much more. There's questions of, like Shabbos you have on Boyer, you know, being Boyer on Shabbos, being Boyer on Yontif, China, chopping up. Also, Hachana, you have a problem of Hachana, preparing from one day Yontif to the next day Yontif, which a lot of people don't seem to realize that that is not permitted. And even people who realize it, you know, they somehow, they're not that careful on it. I mean, for example, like they want to set up the table from one day Yontif to the next day Yontif. But let's say Goyim, they allow Goyim to do it. But then the guy said, goes over to the caterer and says, you know, on this table, which wine shall I put on the table? So the caterer goes to the wine place and takes out a case of wine and gives it to him and says, this is the wine you should put there. Now, this caterer that just did that, he was over. He did Hachana for the next day, which he wasn't permitted. Also, there's a major problem of cooking for a goy on Yontif. Cooking for a goy on Yontif, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly, is also. Therefore, when you have omelet stations on Yontif or even on Chol HaMoed, and even if you have a Jew cooking the omelet, you have a frying pan where you put the eggs in there, even though there's a Jew cooking it, and it's not B'Shul Akam, but if the Jew cooks it for a goy, that is usher.
But who's cooking for a goy? It's all Jewish people in the hotel for Pesach.
Well, I mean, you have waiters. The waiters are not Jewish. And the dishwasher guy and the one that cleans the floors.
So they're all goyim. So why don't you have a goy cook for the goyim?
Well, let's say we're in the middle of a breakfast, so the Jew's cooking for all the guests, and let's say one of the workers walk over, so the Jew's not going to tell
another guy to cook them. Aren't most of the cooks goyim?
Some are goyim and some are Jews. No, you could have some Jews, some goyim.
Okay.
It varies.
Okay.
I mean, I've been there, and I see that a lot of times the Jew cooks for the goyim. And the Jewish waiters who are cooking for the goyim, they don't know the dinim, they don't know the laws.
Okay.
They know a guy comes over, a waiter comes over, and he cooks the egg for him.
Right.
Which is awesome.
Right.
There's another problem which people don't know. Okay, this year it's not relevant, but let's say if the first day's Yontif come out on Thursday and Friday. So how do you cook Friday for Shabbos? Right? The Shabbos being cooked, so you have to prepare Friday for Shabbos.
You have to make an Erev Tefillin.
You can't cook one day for the next day. Right, you make an Erev Tefillin. But what happens if the chef happens to be a non-religious Jew, who's a Mechal Shabbos, who doesn't keep Yiddishkeit? So I saw Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, that just like by Erev, Chatzeres, you know, if a Jew doesn't believe in an Erev, it's not an Erev. The same thing on for Erev Tavshilin, it won't help for him. He will not be allowed to cook on Yontif the next day for Shabbos. And Erev Tavshilin won't help for him, which I think a lot of people, you know, not too many people know this.
Yeah, but it's Machlokes HaPaiskim, whether you say that or not.
Yeah, who says that it's okay?
So I believe Reb Zolberstein brings from Rabbi Yashiv that he said it was okay, and he's Saimachal Anamayim the Mardechai. But well, let me hear, what other shilos do you have?
I was in a place where the goyim had a key to the wine room.
Oh, my goodness.
That they can keep wine. I mean, anybody wants the wine, they go to the goyim and get the key. And the goyim stayed there overnight, so they had the key after everybody left. They had the key to the wine room. They can go in anytime they want.
Yeah, but usually you only drink anyway in a hotel from a closed bottle, not from open bottles, right?
Could be that's the first night. But after the bottles are put back, you know, you don't drink up the whole bottle. You put it back in the waiters clean it off the table, and the next day they bring it back, you know, and those bottles are opened. They're not exactly closed.
Yes, if the cork is in, it's not a problem. But if the cork is out, it's a problem. But it's more than that.
I don't think it makes a difference whether the cork is in or not, because once the guy has it, maybe he took out the cork and he drank some.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Okay, well, what are some of the other problems?
I once had also what is called, even if a guy is cooking, what is called Bishul Akam. You know, I was once in a hotel where they had omelet stations, and the guy was going to cook. I guess, you know, one of the people, the Jewish people that were in charge there, told me that he's cooking eggs, and on eggs there's no Bishul Akam. So I told him, you know, that that's not true. The Shulchan Aruch says clearly that on eggs is bishulakum. Yeah, he says, and the Shulchan Aruch says, even though you can't eat it, even though you could eat it raw, but still that has a din of Shulchan Aruch. Very interesting thing that this person who told me, I took out the Shulchan Aruch, which is Miyodei, and I showed it to him clearly that it eggs is bishulakum. So he said, okay, fine. So he didn't let the guy cook. Now this person afterwards came over to me and asked me what I showed him in the Shulchan Aruch. Was that the Mishnah Berurah or was that in someplace else?
There's no Mishnah Berurah in Yerodeya, yeah.
Right, that means this person did not know the difference between the Mishnah Berurah and the Yerodeya, and yet during the year he happens to be Mashgiach on Shabbos and during the week for caterers in the Brooklyn area.
Oh,
this is the person we're relying on. And also, the main problem is that the Mashgiachim also, that are there for Pesach, who is a Mashgiach? A Mashgiach is someone who either has no family or comes from out of town and has no place where to go, so he takes the job. But most usually, they do not know much halachas. They don't know about Bishalakim. They don't know you can't cook a goy. They don't know. One person, I asked them a question, you know, something about Barim. So the Mashgiach told me that, you know, to tell me the truth, I told him that you were watching, how come you let him do it? So he said, tell me the truth. He said he didn't go through all the halachas of Baruch, so therefore he doesn't know. So I said, so if you don't know, what do? You just let them do it? So you ask. No. So, you know, he doesn't know the halachas. So therefore, they do whatever they want. You know, most Mashgiachim really don't know the halachas. They never learned Mishnah Berurah. They never learned the halachas of Shabbat. They never learned the halachas of Pesach, of Bishulakim. I once had a Mashgiach. I met a Mashgiach once. He asked me if a goy shuts the fire, is that Bishulakim?
If a goy what?
If a goy shuts the fire, is that Bishulakim?
Yeah, so I
told him, no, it's not. Then I offered him, listen, you know, I see, you know, you're a Mashgiach. Come to the yeshiva and I learn with you the halachas of Bishulakim. He wasn't interested. Most Mashgiachim are really not interested in learning the halachas. It's unfortunate and they don't know the dinim. There's another problem also of writing orders on Shabbos or Yontif. That means the waiter comes to you and asks you, you know, what do you want? You want the top of the chicken, the bottom of the chicken? You want steak? You want meat? You want what is your choice of the menu? Because they give out menus, and he says, you know, you tell him what he wants. So he writes it down. He writes down that, you know, there are three chickens on this table with three roasts. Is that permitted on Shabbos and Yom Tov for a waiter to write down the order for you to, so that you should get the right product? I once asked this to a rabbi, and he told me that he's doing it for you because he wants to get a tip, and therefore he wants to satisfy you, and he writes it down so that you shouldn't bring you the wrong thing, and he won't get a tip.
That's nice to Shabbos. But the other argument is he's doing it for himself. He wants to get it right. He could memorize it.
If there were 30 people that he has to memorize, it's very hard to memorize for each person from 30, 40 people who ordered what.
I understand, but how logically you would say for each person he could have memorized it. You see that by his Sofas, or you see in many places in Hilchos Shabbos, where in Halacha in general, where you say for each one, for you I could do it. Because one Pesach could be Michael all of Klal Yisrael. How is that possible? Each one could say, okay, not me, but you. Or by Hesafas Oyer, you have the same Shaila. There's a story with the Chazayin Ish where what happened was there was a Bacher, he was makbid not to use electricity from the city, right? Because he held it was Maisa Shabbos. So the Chazayin Ish said, put one battery in the whatchamacallit, in the base medrash, and then each bacher could say, well, I could use that one, so therefore it always has a din of Hesafa Sayer. So the same thing, each person by the table could say, he's writing for me, he's writing for the other, so don't write for the other, write for me, and it wouldn't be a din of Maisa Shabbos.
The Rabbanim IS said that it's not permitted.
Okay, continue. What are the Shilas?
I once had that we ran out of T-Sense for Shabbos and Yom Tov, so the Mashgiach asked me what he should do, so I told him, what he should do is he should take the tea bags, put it in cold water, and the waiters, when they take hot water from the pitcher from the urn, so from the urn goes into a pitcher that's a kli sheni, and then from there put into another kli, which is a kli shlishi, and then put the sense into that kli, or put the kli shlishi into another water, and put the sense in there. And knowing how much Mashgiachim know, so afterwards, I come back 2 minutes later, and I see that he's putting the tea sense straight into the first kli, into the pitcher. So I asked him, I told you that they should put into kli shlishi, and you're putting it straight in. So he told me no problem. He said he made it much easier. Instead of every time putting in the free sushi from the waiter, what he did was he took the 3 cents which put in the cold water, he took that pot and put it into a second pot and then put that into a third pot. So now the 3 cents is in the third pot, so now it could go directly into the original pot.
Whatever, real amaratim, yeah.
Right. And another case where I saw a caterer putting the put cold water from the sink into the small pot and then put it on top of the chunk pot. So I told him, I understand you. What are you doing? You know, you can't cook on Shabbos. This happened to be on Shabbos. So he told me, I really don't understand. You know, I didn't ring that office. He said, it's simple. But he said that the reason you could do it is because the blech is a kli rishon, the chunk pot is a kli sheni, and the pot is a kli shlishi. And everyone knows a kli shlishi is not mevashel, doesn't cook. So you'd be surprised what could go wrong, what happens. It's unbelievable. Then also the Erev should be checked. You know, you have an Erev. Is it really right? So many times I thought Erev was not the way it should be.
Rabbi Shane, did you ever give a hechsher on a hotel that not the hotel is from, but part is kosher or Pesach and part is Goyim? Did you ever do that or no?
Did I give a hechsher on that? No, not really. But I've been in hotels like that for Pesach as a mashgiach.
That's very problematic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's more of a problem. It's then you have to watch more between the chametz and the pesach that you have to. I mean, as I was once in a hotel where we kosher for Pesach, and there was a bar mitzvah. Someone was making a bar mitzvah there, and he had schnapps and bread and cake regular, but he also wanted, you know, some kosher Pesach Passover food. So we had to stand by the door the whole time, and we couldn't bring out any of the kalim. It all had to be on plates because that was not that was all chametz on Pesach.
Oh my. Okay.
Hello.
Rabbi Shane, this has been very enlightening. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
No problem. Take
care.
Kalta. Bye-bye. Joining us from London is Aryeh Wagner, who is a famed hotelier. He's probably made perhaps the first one who started doing Pesach at hotels. He's been at Davos, Marbella, Turnberry, basically all around the world. He just did something in Dubai, I saw. Welcome, Aryeh.
Thank you.
So, kashrus. Tell me about some of the challenges of making kashrus on Pesach in a remote location.
The biggest challenge in a remote location is how to get the food there. So, not Pesach. I just did now a winter break in Dubai. And although Dubai is a very organized and regulated state, country, the UAE has very strict laws on everything. On the other hand, you need to know how to deal with the people. And this was the biggest challenge, is to get basically the food over the line, to get it from London down to Dubai. And I had the same, similar challenges, but without COVID restrictions when I did it in Scotland, is to get the food up to Scotland, although it's only a 10-hour drive from London. But then when you're missing the butter, it's somebody has to drive for about 5 hours from Gateshead. So every place has its challenges, but I think the biggest challenges are always the logistics.
Okay. And how do you deal with teaching, waiters who have no idea about kashrus, like, you know, the different behaviors and how to not to mix up salt shakers, and how much, like, is that difficult at all?
It's not difficult. I figured out a system where it's almost foolproof. You cannot teach somebody religion. If I would come to your show and try to teach or explain to you about Buddhism, I don't think you're going to really get it. You might maybe understand a bit what I'm saying, but you're not going to get it. And the same is if we want to speak about Judaism or our funny things, which we have, charoises, chrein, milk, meat, the goy will not understand that. Why? Because we're talking to him on a level of religion. And this is a massive hurdle when you want to try and explain to a non-Jew about kashrus. So I decided a few years ago, because I do the same here in London. I manage the kosher events at the Sheraton Park Lane. None of the people in the kitchen are Jewish. I did the same now in Dubai. I tell the guys, I get them together in a room, and I said, listen, forget religion. If I want to try to explain your religion, you ain't going to get it. This is an allergy. I have now 200 people, they are allergic to milk and meat mixed together. You get that? this they get because it's an allergy. If I explain to them and I say, okay, we have here people which have a nut allergy, you also don't know the biology and the chemistry behind it, but you still get it. Why? Because an allergy is very easy to understand. The minute you talk to them about religion, they're going to lose you in translation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're a Ben Tyra. So when people go away on vacation, there's often there's tea rooms and there's the best of food and the best of Gashmias. Does it send a message like of sort of a veil over survey towards the people, towards their children? How do you deal with that as a Ben Tyra?
Firstly, I'm a hotelier. I'm not a Rosh Hashiva and I'm not a teacher. I'm not here to educate my clients. I'm in a business to provide hospitality to people. If they don't know how to behave, that's another conversation, but not with me. I deliver what I believe is good for my business. What I do not like is the wastage part, and I think there's a middle way. So there's programs, and mainly people always refer to the American programs, where there's an abundance of food, but then there is a limit somewhere. I do already for 4 or 5 years a program in St. Moritz at the Kempinski, and people are always saying, oh, your portions are probably not American size and they're small. One thing I know, nobody walked out from the dining room hungry. So you could maybe accuse me for giving less than the Americans, maybe. But I think there's always a middle way. You don't have to be a sting. These times are over. So that's the caterer's, what the caterer can do. But he is also dictated by the market. And the market, it's the same, you know, your question touches a very sore nerve. It's the same what people talk about making big weddings, right? I don't know if you ever touched on that subject.
I agree. It's the same subject. I'd love to hear your opinion.
So my opinion is although I'm very much in a Gerbedova, this is my business, but I had a little argument after there was an article in one of the mainstream newspapers. They made a big campaign against big weddings, and I talk pre-COVID and not during COVID. I'm just talking in general, and I got quite upset about it because this is like one subject that people started to attack the market from a completely different angle. The same like you ask me, it's like, is it a caterer's fault that he gives food and people behave like animals? No, I don't think so. I think it's the chinuch the people got when they grew up. The same is with the weddings. The weddings is a business. And, you know, when people do weddings and do big weddings and somebody which has a lot of money and he wants to splash out, let him splash out. Nobody ever complains if he buys himself a pogon pole kitchen and he spends $150,000 on a kitchen, which about $140,000 go to Germany to the manufacturer. But when you do a wedding for $150,000, then probably $149,000 go to Jewish suppliers. The chair hire is a Jewish supplier. You're giving people panosa. And this is the most beautiful thing a person can do. Somebody turned around to me and said, no, the person should give more tzedakah. I said, oh, okay, it's a good idea. So tomorrow, me, Moishi Greenfeld, and Miri Moses, the florist, will go and knock at his door every week and collect our paycheck. So from a position of a caterer, again, that constant argument about doing smaller weddings and it's not right for the tzibur and it's a bad example, this is, in my opinion, putting the emphasis and forgetting on the wrong thing and forgetting really who is really living off of that massive industry. These are all Yidden. It's maybe 90% Yidden. The hall, the caterer, the butcher, the mashgiach, the printer is Jewish, the table hire company is Jewish, and the glass hire company is Jewish, and the photographer and the videographer, they're all Jewish. It's fantastic. All it does, there's a movement of wealth from one part of our society to the other part of the society. And I think the same view I have in terms of Pesach programs, There's plenty of people which need to go away for Pesach. They haven't got somebody at home. It's difficult. Or they want to go because they can afford it. Good for them. That argument about Pesach and big weddings, I've never heard somebody complaining in one of the main newspapers about the fees that the solicitors take for a property transaction.
Yeah, I would just say that, first of all, I agree with you that it's not the caterer's problem. The caterer is just paid to provide a service, and they do. I was just asking, as somebody who you see so many of these weddings, do you ever scratch your head and say, wow, that seemed excessive? But certainly not, you know, your job is to just do as told, basically, supply as told. You're not the mashgiach and you're not their rav. I was asking more of an opinion. Do you think that they're over the top and they're excessive as a person who's seen them? You know, that
have you ever walked into a shul and says, this guy has an expensive suit? I think that's excessive. Have you ever walked in and said somebody, oh, your watch is a IWC? That's excessive.
I would say that I honestly wouldn't know what an IWC is watch.
A Rolex.
Okay, and I wouldn't, and I also wouldn't honestly know what somebody's suit is. But you know, a lot of these affairs, they're showy and they're meant to be showy. Like, that's the goal, right? So that is something that you can't help but noticing. But I couldn't tell you. I never met in my whole life. I could tell you what somebody's watch they were wearing. So, you know, this is particularly something that is just, it's meant to be in your face.
What is meant to be, that's already a personal decision of the Baal Simcha.
Agreed, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
If he does it to show off, or he does it because he has a big house and he wants to splash out and thank people and make something really nice and enjoyable in a big concert. You can look at it from any angle you want. But to look at it from an angle where people say, oh, this is showy and he should give more tzedakah, no.
Okay. Your point is maybe the guy wants to be mesameach a lot of people. He has a big heart and wants to share it.
That's... Yeah. The next argument is then they say, oh no, but then neighbor B also needs to do a big wedding because neighbor A did a big wedding. And that comes again back to the chinuch. If you can spend it, spend it. If you spend over your means, which I think is a massive problem, not just in England, but also in the States. If you spend over your means, then you should be told off by your parents. I don't know by whom. But this is a personal problem. If I'm going to stop doing big weddings, that's not going to change the chinuch of the people.
Right. You're saying societally, these are not caterers' issues, these are not wedding issues, these are societal issues which either are or aren't addressed. And, you know, to blame it or to point the finger at one particular event is inappropriate. That's the message. That's the point, right?
Yeah, that's the point. Because if the chinuch is displayed by the media, they're saying, oh, the weddings are bad and all these things are really bad. At the same time, I'm out of business for 8 months, you know, 9 months, maybe almost a year now. I didn't do any simchas. I got a phone call a few months ago from some rabbi which saw something I was doing, and he said, under what heksha have you done this? And I said to him, thank you very much for calling me. Now you call me? For 8 months, I have no job. You never called me how I'm doing.
Right.
You never asked me how my panosa is going, if I cope, if I need maybe some help. So I think the focus is, in all these questions, is a bit, people are not honest with themselves. The problem is the chinuch of people, of our society, chesed, looking after others. And if the other guy does a big wedding, enjoy with him.
Right. What do you think about the people who say that going away for Pesach takes away the whole, you know, at home, cleaning the house properly, the chinuch in bedikas chametz, the chinuch in, you know, getting a house ready for Pesach, the chinuch in what the preparations of our mothers used to do to, you know, the chumris they had in Hilchos Pesach, and a lot of that chinuch of sitting by the starim alone, a lot of that chinuch seems to be, you know, families who go away consistently for Pesach, their children never see that. Do you think there's anything amiss about that?
I'm continuing to what I told you until now. If that person tells me that kashas his chicken livers at home, then okay, I listen to him. But you want to pick out now this Pesach, it became like a Korah Adumo. That's going to be picked out now as the problem of our society. The big wedding and going away for Pesach. Because if you go away for Pesach, you forget about how it is to do Pesach at home. I don't know, last year nobody went away for Pesach. I think everybody had a nice Pesach at home. And everybody managed. It's not going to take away from our culture. I don't think so.
And do the Pesach programs you've been involved with, like, provide a ruchniistic element to them as far as shiurim, etc.?
Of course. But I was last year at home for Pesach. I didn't go to as many shiurim as I would have gone when I did Pesach myself. So we do. We bring rabbonim, and each program is different. Each program has a different angle. Some are more into the chinuch and into the rashmir and the ruchnias. Some are less religious. Yeah, if you look at these type of programs, then perhaps you're right. On the other hand, some people don't know how to do Pesach at home, so at least they go to Pesach where there's something going on and they have a connection to Yiddishkeit. There's a lot of stories which happened in my programs where people started to meet each other and open their eyes, because I usually have a mixed bunch of people. Charedim to people, which I had a guy in Davos, he went skiing and his wife came to Davos. Many years later, I did a wedding for them in London, probably about 15 years later. For their daughter, I catered a wedding for them in London. And the guy is already not skiing on Shabbos, no nothing. But they had to go away to a place where the wife would be happy with kashrus and ruchnias, and he wanted still to be whoever he is, and nobody looked down on him. And there's many stories like that.
Okay.
You can always look at the positive.
Share with us your best story, or what, two or three of your stories that you really enjoy sharing.
The one story I get reminded by a good friend of mine, we'll tell only his first name, Yossi, he'll be embarrassed. He called me up and he says, I'm a novel, I need to be in Eretz Yisrael straight after Pesach, don't want to be in Eretz Yisrael because of second day Yom Tov, and Reb Nosson Tzvi told me I should come to you. Okay, so we're in Switzerland, and from Switzerland he can get very easily to Yerushalayim. But I have one t'nai. So what's the t'nai? I want to do my own charoises. Okay, I said, fine. 2 months later, he comes in with his apples and his all kinds of his utensils, walks into the kitchen, and he wants to start doing charoises. My mother walks in and screams at him, get out of the kitchen, what the hell are you doing? He shouts, he says, Aryeh promised it. My mother shouts at me, what is this, a guest coming in, Pesach? In the end, we figured it out. My mother says, okay, I'll give you everything. You leave your utensils outside. Here's a room. Do your charoises. Until today, he doesn't forget it. He can do his own charoises. So there's all kinds of mishigasim people have. But my best story, I remember a guy standing next to the piano, and all the boys around him, and he was analyzing handwritings on Motzeh Pesach in Scotland.
Okay.
You know who it is.
Yeah. So, do you think Pesach programs are for everybody, or do you think that it's, you know, some people should stay at home, some people should go away? Like, what's your hargasha?
It's whoever wants, needs, can. It's like summer holidays. Should you stay at home? I think it's a good thing to go away for a holiday, if you can. A lot of people, especially in the States, the Pesach business is huge in the States because people do not take off holiday. Stump. Work, business is a religion in the States. And to take stump a week off and to go on holiday, this is unheard of. So the only time you have to take off is during Sukkot and Pesach, which you anyhow have to take off. And if we already have to go away, so at least let's go away to a nice place. I can see. I can hear that.
Yeah. Well, Aryeh, thank you very much. It's been really nice speaking to you.
Pleasure.
Kol tov. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hakushon Pesach.
Hakushon Sameach. Bye-bye.